This is Robert Merglacci, publisher of the Mindshare Learning Report, Canada's learning and technology e-magazine. I'm honored to have joined me today for a Mindshare Learning Moment, Dr. Tony Bates, the former director of distance education and technology and adjunct professor at the University of British Columbia. Drawing on his 40 years of expertise in higher education in Canada and around the world, a Contact North associate, Dr. Bates has authored a comprehensive, easy-to-read guide that answers the questions and many, many more, all in a single location. This digital book entitled Teaching in the Digital Age for Designing, Teaching, and Learning in the Digital Age. Thank you for joining me this afternoon, Tony.
My pleasure.
Wow, I'm so impressed by the fact that, and congratulations on the book. You actually created a digital book using a digital book platform by OpenBC Education. And what inspired it?
A number of things. First of all, the BC campus, which is something like Contact North in Ontario, had this open textbook project. It had funding from the government to develop open textbooks for post-secondary students in British Columbia. I should say something about that. As everywhere, textbooks are a major cost for students these days. In BC, we estimate that students spend on average $1,200 a year on textbooks. So the BC government wanted to make textbooks more accessible to students and put some funding through BC Campus to do that. So BC Campus basically got some professors and instructors in BC to review a number of books and might turn them into open texts, which are then available to the students to download for free. And so they had a platform for hosting these books. And I'd heard about this and I was interested. And secondly, most of my work is working with faculty and instructors around Canadian universities.
Right.
And I found there wasn't really one good resource to go to, one single place that gave an overview of both, not just the technological issues that are arising from the today, but also the pedagogical issues and how those two went together. So right. I felt there was a niche in the market there. There was a gap. And the idea of having a textbook that instructors can go to doesn't cost them anything. They can just go to any section of the book they want to, one click, and they're in. I thought that would be a good idea.
Wow, I commend you on that design concept and harnessing that knowledge and really walking the digital talk. And, you know, oftentimes I come across, you know, leaders who don't model the use of technology. And you did that very thing. How's the book been received so far?
Well, it's hard to evaluate. It came out on April the 7th, so it's nearly 2 months it's been out now.
Right. So you'll be able to monitor downloads, presumably, and get a sense in terms of how many?
On May the 24th, there had been 8,200 downloads of the book.
Wow.
Now, I don't know whether that's good or bad. You know, there are probably 500,000 faculty instructors in North America alone. So.
Right. Well, I would imagine, you know, once we publish this this podcast, it'll be an accelerator for you, no doubt. But on a serious note, the you know, being springtime and end of year, it might have been challenging for some of the professors to dig deep into it at this juncture. But I think over the summer, I would imagine it'll be a good opportunity for them to take some time to read through. And also, you've incorporated podcasts. I'm really impressed by that.
Yeah, I'm planning to do more. I have only done two or three at the moment, but I plan to do more, but I just wanted to get the book out as soon as possible. I actually wanted to get it out before the summer so that there was a chance of catching faculty on their summer break, because they've probably got some good novels to read, but you could also read this over the summer break.
Absolutely. So this whole concept turns the business model upside down for publishers in Canada and beyond, when you've got BC creating these textbooks for students. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's interesting. I've actually published 12 books through commercial publishers. And in recent years, I've had some good experiences with publishers, so I don't want to be overly critical. And particularly the support they give in editing, and particularly for new authors, it's really important to have that kind of professional editing support that you can get from a commercial publisher. But in the last few years, they've been terrible at marketing. They've been just awful. In fact, they do virtually nothing, and they expect authors to do the marketing of their own books.
Interesting.
So, especially if they're specialist books, like mine tend to be. So, in a sense, I was fed up with publishers, and I was more than happy to do this book for free. I'm at the end of my career, and I don't need to have what one might call reference publications. And it's a form of giving back. It's a way of putting together all my experience in one place and making it available to people after I've gone. So it's a bit of a vanity publishing thing, as well as
you're
meeting a real need.
Fascinating. Well, kudos to you for making that contribution. Is technology finally coming of age in education?
I don't think it's a question now about should we use technology. It's more a question of how we should use it, when we should use it, and particularly relating it to the kinds of learning that we want to develop. The focus of my book actually is on, I don't like the term, but on developing 21st century skills. In other words, teaching methods that will enable students to develop the skills they need after they've left university, whatever subject they're doing. And so the book really focuses on how to develop those skills. And, of course, two of the key skills are ability to use information technologies within any particular subject discipline, so that once they leave university, they expect to use technology and know how to use it and how to assess it. But also, because these days the knowledge base is growing so quickly and so rapidly, they really need to know how to manage knowledge. You know, they need knowledge management skills.
Absolutely.
They need to know how to use the technology to do that. So we need to embed the technology in our teaching, not because teaching technology is cool, but because it's necessary to develop core skills that students will need, whatever job, profession, or even within their social lives, so that they can actually handle technology better.
Thank you for that. Not every university or college is at the same place in its evolution of their learning platform or digital classroom, if you will. What are some of the key drivers that you see in inhibitors, if you will?
Last year, I went to 19 different universities in Canada, all of them trying to develop some kind of strategy for e-learning or online learning or flexible learning or digital learning and so on. See, I mean, you know, there's something like 60 to 70 universities in Canada, so at least a fifth of them, I think, are already heavily engaged in trying to get a strategy, trying to get technology used by their faculties and so on. So I think that most Canadian universities know that this is an important area. They have to put resources aside. They have to have a strategy. They have to train faculty. So I think most of them are in that position. I think more of a problem is knowing how to do it. And particularly given the fact that there are so few rewards for good teaching compared with good research. I think the real challenge is, how do we make teaching as highly valued in the universities as research is? Because unless we do that, there's not much incentive for them to make the effort, and there's a lot of effort required to change their teaching to make it more relevant to the needs of students these days and to incorporate technology within that change.
Absolutely. What could provincial governments be doing better in supporting institutions and professors?
That's a good question, and I've been following what the ministry has been doing in Ontario, and I think, you know, in sort of fits and starts, the Ontario system is beginning to move in the right direction. I think, you know, the idea of being very clear on what the mandates of different institutions are, I don't expect them all to focus so heavily on technology as others. You know, I can see that for some of the small rural institutions, they might want to put much more focus on face-to-face teaching. But if you've got a very large urban university, I think we need to start asking some questions about why students are coming to campus and what kind of campus experience are making it worth their while when they can do most of their studying online. Now, I'm not suggesting that we should create online universities, but I think we need to be much more focused on what the role of the campus is, when students can learn online. And I think this has implications for, particularly for building. For instance, if, as I think, 50% of all learning and studying will be done online by 2020, do we need to carry on building so many new campuses, for instance? Could we not make better use of our existing facilities? And do we have the kind of learning spaces that universities need? When students are doing a lot of their work online but come into campus to share their experience with other students, do we have the learning spaces that allow them to bring their devices, plug them in, demonstrate what they're doing on large screens around the room and so on? So I think there's a lot of things that the provincial government can do, not in trying to tell universities what to do, but asking good questions like, what is the implications of your strategies for online learning for your campus development, for instance? I mean, I think it's a reasonable question to ask, particularly if they're coming and saying we want another $200 million for a new building.
Those are very interesting insights that you shared, and questions and challenges. And, you know, being in the GTA and traveling in the worst traffic of, most cities in North America, it causes you to ponder whether or not leveraging blended learning to minimize the impact on the city ecosystem and think more green, it certainly has merit, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if we could cut travel to campuses down by even 30%, that would make a huge difference. And I think that's certainly an achievable aim. I don't say that's why we should use online learning, but I think we should look at the implications of going online for commuting to campus and so on.
Right. And it's that, you know, notion of smart communities, right? And then education definitely has a role to play in the ecosystem of a smart city.
Definitely.
There was a recent announcement of one of the universities building a new campus, which, you know, was hailed with great fanfare. But like you, I'm pondering whether or not they're going to regret that in 10 years.
One of the problems, of course, is that both politicians and presidents of universities have an edifice complex. You know, they like to be seen cutting ribbons. It looks like they're doing something concrete and positive. So I understand the psychology behind this. But on the other hand, I think we also need to look at other values and priorities. And online learning does allow us to do that if we use it intelligently.
Absolutely. And you talked about classrooms and professors doing things differently and why they come to campus. And it's that notion perhaps of the flipped classroom, where they come to have more dialogue and collaboration and work in groups versus, you know, teaching or lecturing one to many.
Okay, I agree with what you just said, Robert. I think that what we need, one of the things I'm trying to get over in my book is that I have this kind of recipe for online learning or for blended learning. What you need is imagination and vision from teachers and instructors. There's lots of possibilities out there, and that has to be driven not by what the technology can do, but what we want to achieve in our teaching and learning, what we could achieve with the use of technology. So I've tried to avoid in the book saying, you know, this is the best way to teach, but I've tried to provide you some options. And one of the things that I have in the book is a number of scenarios which basically are my kind of visions of where we could be in 5 to 10 years' time, realistically, some ways in which we could be teaching, and in some cases, actual examples of what people are already doing. So, but this all comes back down to the individual instructors and faculty members' imagination and vision about how they should be teaching. And what the technology allows people to do is to implement those kind of visions.
Absolutely. How is Canada doing on a global scale when it comes to integrating technology and the teaching practice through e-learning and blended learning?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer because it means knowing what other countries are doing. And I mean, although I do travel quite a bit, it's really hard even to know in Canada what everybody's doing. But I think we're not doing bad, actually. I think we're doing pretty good compared with many other countries. I think that one of the advantages of our system, it's often seen as a disadvantage, is the kind of devolved nature of the system. So it's very difficult for central government to come in, and as they're doing in the UK, and try to tell the universities how to do things. So what we've got in Canada is a lot of experimentation and innovation. One of the weaknesses of the system, of course, is that often we don't know about the innovations that are going on elsewhere. So we have less of adoption across the system, perhaps, than we might. But I would rather have that innovation and freedom for faculty to try new things and so on than to have very heavy-handed government initiatives trying to force people into using technology or teaching in a particular way and so on, as I'm afraid they're doing in the UK at the moment.
Right. Is there, because of all the fragmentation, would there be any value in having a national portal of some type for collaboration and sharing? And if I wanted to take a course from UBC or, UPEI, and I can go to one portal and mix and match, do you ever envision that happening one day?
It's possible, but there are lots of barriers to doing that at the moment. One is credit transfer. And
right.
I'm afraid Ontario here is very bad at that. In BC and Alberta, it's very easy to transfer credits from institutions. So let's say you spend 2 years at Okanagan, in the Okanagan, and then want to transfer into a university in Vancouver because your family's moving there. That's very easy to do. It's very difficult to do that in Ontario. There are 7 institutions that have an agreement in place, but it's not a sort of universal system there. And unless you have that, then it doesn't make a lot of sense to allow students to pick and choose from different institutions in different provinces and try to put a degree together. Now, the Canadian Virtual University is trying to do something like that.
Right.
It's proved very difficult because of these barriers to credit transfer.
Right.
Actually wrote once that the only thing more difficult than moving from a university in BC to Ontario is bringing a bottle of wine in.
It's true. Yeah, these barriers, I think over time will diminish. And I think the drivers now, I mean, how important are students as a driver to change?
Students have certainly been driving the open textbook system. When BC decided to offer open textbooks, the provincial student union in Saskatchewan lobbied their government, and Saskatchewan joined the BC project as a result. So I think students can be very important drivers of change here. And you have a very good Ontario Undergraduate Student Association, very well organized and very active, and I think they're playing a very important role in Ontario.
How important are organizations like Contact North, and you alluded to another organization out in BC that's similar to that?
These are what I call meta institutions. They sort of sit above all the other institutions. That's probably the wrong word, but they sort of do things on a province-wide basis. That's difficult for the individual institutions to do. And so that makes it very important to have those kinds of institutions. So, for instance, in Ontario, Contact North enables any university to use one of its learning centres to deliver their programs into that learning centre and have student advisors there and support there. And I think that's very important, particularly in rural areas, to have that access to a wide range of universities within the province.
Absolutely.
These mentor organisations are very important. And that's particularly true when it comes to innovations in technology, because BC Campus, there's an organisation called the Educational Technology Users Group in BC, which brings together all the people from the different institutions, and they share experiences across from their institution into other institutions. And so we see quite a bit of sharing as a result of the coordination between these meta bodies like Contact North and BC Campus.
Any final thoughts to share, Tony, around the digital learning space in post-secondary education in Canada?
I think that instructors and faculty are under a lot of... it's very difficult for them. Particularly in universities, the emphasis is all on research and not on teaching. Some institutions are now developing career tracks in teaching, tenured tracks in teaching. I think we need to see much more of that, because without important incentives for faculty to change, there's no reason for them to read my book. I mean, if they can go on doing what they've always been doing and nothing happens as a result, then why would they make the effort to do anything different? I mean, I wouldn't if I was in their position.
Absolutely.
Well, I think we really need to think about better ways to provide incentives for good teaching and reward professors and instructors for good teaching. I think there are ways to do that. I think that's probably a critical role for government here. Why would you fund an institution that doesn't have professional teaching going on? It doesn't have a program or doesn't have a strategy for professional teaching. I wouldn't give them grants. You know, I really wouldn't. So I think government can play an important role here. I hope it will be of a positive nature, encouragement rather than punishment. But at the end of the day, government can actually put incentives in place to make institutions move in this direction. But I would hope that institutions themselves wouldn't need that external pressure to do it. Now, I do see a bit of a shift. We got the Society for Teaching and Learning in Higher Education coming here in Vancouver next week.
Oh, cool.
Already beginning to see some understanding that of the need to have teaching as a career track, having a way of building it in as a career track as well as research. And I think that's going to be absolutely critical.
With that, I thank you, Tony, for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Robert.
That was Dr. Tony Bates, professor at UBC, consultant, and research associate at Contact North. My name is Robert Martellacci, the Mindshare Learning Report. And until next time, keep the learning curve steep.